So welcome everyone to our JCC Coffee, Cake, and Learning Genesis, the big inning. And I know it promises baseball, but sadly all the teams that I cheer for are now playing golf. So I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. All the teams I love, the Orioles and the Yankees, etc., they're all playing golf today, and I'm very sad, you know. But we must go on. So what I'd like to do today is clearly dedicate the schluss, the learning that we're going to do should be for the speedy and complete recovery of those who were hurt in Israel and to help with the pain and suffering and loss that of Achenu Beis Israel, Beretz Israel, of our brothers and sisters living in the land of Israel. Hashem should give them nechama, comfort, and refuah, and healing. So let's begin at the beginning, because I promised you the beginning. So it says, Bereshis bara Elokim, Esa Shemai V'Esa Aretz. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And it talks about the earth being unformed and void. And what was there? There was Choshech. Darkness was upon the face of the deep. All there was darkness. And the spirit of Hashem, of God, hovered over the face of the waters. And then something that I mentioned at the rally, I'll just mention it very briefly now. So what was there in the world? There was darkness, Choshech. Now, clearly, when we speak about a separation of darkness and light, the light that exists in Genesis is not the sunlight that we associate with. How do I know this? Because it wasn't until the fourth day of creation that God created the sun, the moon, the stars, and time. So what type of light are we talking about? The rabbis have a lot to say about this. It's very mysterious, very mystical. It's Kabbalah. But there's something called the Or HaGanus, sort of this hidden light of your soul, of your neshama. And that's really the light that we're talking about when God creates light from the darkness. So we also see this as a metaphor because it's a havdalah. It's a divide, a separation. God separated between the darkness and the light, and he declared that the light was tov, good. So think about it as a metaphor. I spoke about this. I'm not going to extend the point. But just in case you weren't at the rally, the Solidarity Rally, Havdalah, the separation between light and darkness, is a primeval separation between good and evil. Evil exists because there's a duality to our existence, our world. There's a flip side of everything. Where there's good, there's evil. Where there's evil, there's good. And God willing, the good, the light will outweigh the darkness. And as we said at the rally, it doesn't take a whole lot of light to illuminate a room from darkness. Just one little candle, like the Hanukkah story, can manifest itself and remove darkness from even the most difficult, trying, dark area in the world. We are at a position right now, humanity, mankind, that we need to make this choice. It's a very stark choice right now. I'm going to be honest with you. If anyone saw the wonderful Douglas Murray, I sent out this incredible little video of him speaking on YouTube. If you didn't get a chance to hear it, it's 10 minutes long. He's not a Jew. He is a British man, very eloquent. He spoke in a synagogue from the dais right after these events. And he essentially said that this is a time where mankind has to starkly represent itself. There's good and there's evil. And if you stand with the terrorists of Hamas and what they did, remember, the rally in New York and the other rallies, they happened before we even knew who had died, before we even buried the dead. Israel had not responded yet to anything. So there cannot be, it's Israeli atrocities. No, they were simply showing support for evil. And now, I won't tell you what he suggested, well, maybe I will. He said, and this is something that the United Kingdom cannot tolerate, and he offered, it's not going to happen, that these people should be stripped of their citizenship because they're ISIS. They're not Brits, and they should be sent somewhere else. Now, that's not going to happen. That's not America. But that's how powerful he felt, Douglas Murray felt this loss. We all feel that. So make no mistake, somebody who is right now standing up and saying, I side, like if they, organizations, are putting like the paraglider image on their flags when they're, you know, the paragliders who flew in to rape and kill little children and women. That's the image of solidarity. That's a swastika. There's no difference. Absolutely no difference. And in fact, at that rally in New York that happened right after, there were people who had phones who were showing swastikas, the flags, on their phones. And it's kind of ironic because they're people of color and they should know better, because if the swastika people, they may kill Jews first, but they're coming for people of color second or third. They're also on that list. So it's kind of ironic that they're too stupid to understand that they would make that same extermination list just a little bit less of a priority. So that's really the beginning of our Torah. We have this stark contrast between good and evil. Maimonides, the Rambam, tells us, this is something I did not share at the rally, so it's new material. Harishut netuna. He says in the laws of slicha mechila, of forgiveness that we learn about right before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, for the Day of Atonement Yom Kippur, he says, license is given to every human being to be good or evil. And it uses the word evil. He says Rasha, which is an evil person. It's also someone who is someone capable of creating a universe for themselves. And in that universe that person has created, they, and only they, occupy that little universe. In other words, every human being in our world, all of us, have the magical gift from God of reshut, license, kind of like James Bond without the martini. So we have a license to create, or God forbid, a license to kill. Now, what is so powerful about that? And think about that. This is, again, right from Genesis. So Adam and Eve are given one law. What's the rule? Whatever that tree is in the middle of the garden, they ate sadas, the tree of knowledge, don't eat from it. Everything else is yours, right? And they kept that law, they kept that mitzvah for a very short time, just a bunch of hours. And then they eat the fruit, the forbidden fruit. Let me ask you a question. If they didn't have freedom of choice to eat from the tree, then how could they have eaten from the tree? Ooh. It's a great question. In other words, everyone says, well, once they ate, then they knew the difference between yodea tov v'ra, the difference between knowledge of good and evil. But obviously, if they transgressed by overcoming the one rule they were given, they must have had some element of choice. So Maimonides is differentiating. He's saying freedom of decision-making is what they had. But when they consumed the forbidden fruit, then internally, they now have the power of license to create, like a god. They were, and we are, like gods. Now, hopefully, our creations are limited to your kitchen and to your good things that we apply our creative abilities to. But essentially, a person has the ability to make a magnificent world of light and good and wonder and grow our world. But conversely, this is the duality. God gave the human being the ability to create pure evil and a world that is an illusory world, doesn't really exist. So in other words, a couple of young men in Columbine, Colorado, can feel aggrieved and they can talk to each other. Oh, teachers hate us. Parents hate us. So, you know, it makes sense that we're going to steal old dad's guns and we're going to go to high school and we're just going to kill everybody because we're that aggrieved. Now, in what universe does that make any logic or sense? You know what universe? Their universe, and that's the only universe that they, anyone else in the world, objectively would look at that and say, that's insanity. And it is. But we have the ability to create an insane universe. I dare say that the people on the campuses of Harvard and the generation that literally glorifies rape and pedophilia, it's unimaginable. That's what we're talking about. I'm being very candid with you. That's what went on in Israel, okay? Rape and pedophilia. If they somehow support this, they are guilty of taking this power of license to create, and they've created a world for themselves. And I have to say, sadly, they're not the only ones who occupy the world. They occupy it with all their friends online and the rallies they go to. I don't know how to extricate that mentality from these people. I'm aggrieved. I don't know the answers. I'm sharing with you ideas and thoughts, and I wish I could just wave a magic wand and say, oh my gosh, let's put the genie back in the bottle. I don't know what to make of it. I'm shocked like you are when you hear of literal people that I love. There's an actor who I adore. His name is John Cusack. You know John Cusack? He's made some great movies. I can never watch a movie after hearing him support the murder and pillage of our people. I don't care about his politics, but when he says that that was okay, then it's not okay for me to ever watch a John Cusack movie. I'm sorry, I'm not a cancel culture guy, but how could I sit down and have a flight of fancy by watching one of his cute movies if I know that the man in real life wants me dead, essentially? I mean, it's horrible. So how do you put the genie back in the bottle? I don't know. But we're dealing now with our Parsha, right? It's Bereshit, it's Genesis, and it's right there in Genesis. So we have to make that stark divide between the light, the darkness, the good and the evil. And Baruch Hashem, thank God, most in America and in Canada and other parts of the civilized world in Europe, they're with the light. They're ready to go. Now, how long will they stay there? That's an open question. Please God, they will. They'll have the fortitude, like we said, the resolve to not allow this just to go into the, oh, well, it's just part of the status quo now. Israel's going to be fighting this interminable battle. And, you know, we're going to see, you'll see moral equivalence, right? You'll say, well, there are deaths on this side in Gaza, and there's deaths on that side in Sderot. And it's kind of the same thing. Everyone's guilty. Let me ask you a question. Is Israel going into Gaza because Israel made this choice for itself? Obviously, it's not moral equivalence. It's like 9/11. We didn't go into Afghanistan. Iraq is a separate story. We did not go into Afghanistan because that was the choice that our government made. The choice was made for us by Osama bin Laden, Yimach Shemo, that means may his name be eradicated, and Al-Qaeda, who chose to kill 3,000 Americans that day. That wasn't a choice that we made. This is not a choice that Israel, the Jewish people, have made. But we're there. We have to respond, and we will respond. And please God, we will be able to support. And that's where we can come in. We need to do advocacy for Israel right now and let our government officials who are standing with us know how much we love them. And we know it's going to be difficult for them to stand the course, to stay with us. So please God, we should do this together. Okay, let's look at source number two. Now this is a quote from Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki. Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, who's known as Rashi.
So could somebody make me a copy because I'm white and there's no more copies left?
Oh, we have copies. If somebody could just share here. Oh, there's one right here? Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We're on source number two. Thank you, Moshe. So let me read it. Now, no, not at all. I appreciate you being here. So in source two, this Rashi was written 1,000 years ago. It could have been written this week, as you will see. Okay? It's so topical. Now, why? Here's the question of Rashi. Rashi is very smart guy. And he assumes that we already know his question. The only problem is, he doesn't really say what his question is. And there's books on it, what's bothering Rashi? Like, why is he making this comment? So he is the most formidable Torah commentator of all time. He's commented on every word of the Bible, of the five books of Chumash. He also commented, not once, not twice, but almost three times on some 2,700 folios of Talmud. He comments on everything. In fact, there's a joke because we need a little humor. I'm sorry, I'm getting very dark. So Rashi, who is this formidable Torah commentator, is sitting writing one of his commentaries. And Mrs. Rashi, I don't know her name, she's going to the ladies' auxiliary sisterhood meeting at the local temple. And she's about to leave. And he looks up from his work and he sees she's all dressed up. And he says, dear, he says to his wife, you know, I'm not sure if that hat and that outfit mesh perfectly together. She looks at him and says, Rashi, do you have to comment on everything? Rabbi Yitzchak said, it was not necessary to begin the Torah, the Bible, except from the words in Exodus 12:2, this month is to you, HaKodesh Hazeh Lechem, which is the first commandment that the Israelites were commanded. Now, for what reason did he commence with in the beginning? Why does it have to start with Bereshit, in the beginning? Because of the verse, the strength of his works he related to his people to give them the inheritance of the nations. For if the nations of the world, the UN, should say to Israel, you are robbers, for you conquer by force the lands of the seven nations of Canaan, they will reply, meaning the Jewish people, to these naysayers, Bereshit, in the beginning. The entire earth belongs to God, the Holy One, blessed is He. God created it, and this we learn from the story of creation that is cited here, and He gave it to whomever He deemed proper when He, God, wished. First, He gave it to them, the seven nations of the Canaanites, and when He wished, He took it away from them and gave it to us. So this, let me paraphrase Rashi, ready? It's magnificent. So Rashi is saying like this. Is the Torah a historical document, or is it a book of commandments? Because if it's a book of commandments, then why don't you just fast forward to the very first command given to all of the Jewish people? They were still slaves in Egypt, and right before the Exodus happened, with Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner, etc., right before that moment, God gave the Jewish people the first commandment as a nation to declare that they had sovereignty over time itself. They would declare the new moon, hence the Jewish calendar, used to be up in heaven, now it's going to be man's purview. Great. So why not start there? So Rashi says, well, it didn't start there. Why do we start with Genesis? Why do we start right here? Genesis, because obviously he loves Phil Collins, but more than that, I'm sorry. That, come on, I got to throw little things only for people to understand. So why does he start with Genesis? You know why? Because he's the master of the game. And he's telling us, God is Mr. Monopoly. He created every piece on the board. And he first ordained that the nation of Israel would not get the land of Israel. No, it's going to go first to those seven nations of the Canaanites. But the Canaanites are horrible people. They threw children into the fire god Molech and did unspeakable crimes. And so then God said to Joshua, when you go into the land, it's a promised land, but you're going to have to give a proposition to the nations of the Canaanites. Leave or fight. One of the nations, the Girgashi, they left. They said, bye-bye, nice knowing you. And then there were wars against the other six nations of the Canaanites, who were a depraved culture. They lost, we won. Ah, but God says, at some point in the future, the nations of the world are going to get together at something called the United Nations. And they're going to come up with a bunch of proclamations. And no doubt, they will say to you, Listim, you're a bunch of robbers. Y'all stole the land from the proper indigenous people, the Canaanites. How dare you? And our response is, well, first of all, if there's any Canaanites around today, yeah, okay, they have a legitimate grievance. We can take this to court. But in absence of the Canaanites, who I don't think they're around anywhere, God created the world. He gave it to them. And then he said, it's now you, you and yours. It belongs to the Jewish people. God could do what he wants because he owns the world. So let me ask you a question. Has this accusation ever occurred? I mean, it's a joke, right? Because this is the whole element that we are a bunch of European interlopers who came and threw out the indigenous people who live in this land of Israel, claim the land of our as our own. We're not even there. Now, they have, by the way, they have nothing to say about the 3 million Yemenite, Moroccan, Spanish, Sephardic Jews who have been living in that land for hundreds and hundreds of years, that they don't address. They just talk about the Europeans who have come there. Okay? So that is the claim going on right now, that we are not allowed to have our own land. So that's why their refrain is, from the river to the sea. Do you know what the river to the sea means? From the Jordan River, which is the far side of Israel going to the east, to the Mediterranean Sea, Palestine will be free. Do you know what that means? Where are the Jews going? Into the sea. We're going for a swim. We're going to the metaphorical Auschwitz-Birkenau again. So when you hear someone shouting out that refrain, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, they're basically saying, Judenrein. No Jews are allowed here. How amazing is that? That 1,000 years ago, Rabbi Shlomo ben Yitzchak writes this commentary and says this is the reason that the starting point of our Bible, of our Torah, begins with that one word, in the beginning. So that's why we have our Torah classes named this. Okay, but there's a second part to it. Okay, listen to this. Let me ask you a question. How many non-Jews are going to read this Rashi? Very few, right? In history, you could probably count them in a couple rooms here at the Jewish Community Center, who actually read this Rashi. And if they did read this Rashi, does it matter to them? Probably not. They could care less. They'll say, well, that's just some rabbi from 1,000 years ago making a commentary. It doesn't have any sway with us. So who was Rashi talking to? If he's not talking to the nations of the world, you know who he's talking to? To us, everyone around this table, to every Jew and everyone who loves the Jewish people. He's saying, it's not for them. You have to believe this in your guts. You have to be the ones who are Neman. If you will have faith and trust in these words, that Israel is yours, and all the Russian horror, all the evil speech that will be said against the land of Israel, to slander the land of Israel, you got to know your history. You have to be able to defend the Jewish people. You have to cite chapter and verse on the history of the Jewish people. And you have to say that we've never left. The only time we ever left Israel, it was under Roman coercion. We were literally dragged and blown up and killed by the Romans to leave Israel. It was never a willing departure on behalf of any Jew ever in Jewish history. Once we're there forever, except for persecution, right? So this Rashi is speaking to you and me, because if we're going to preach to the rest of the world to stand with Israel, we have to believe in our hearts and our souls that Israel is legitimate. That's what he's saying here. It's not for the Gentile, it's for the Jew. In other words, we can't hope to affect someone else's opinion change if we don't walk the walk. And I'll cite you from the coming parsha. Ready? The wonderful man Noah, Noah, you know, Noah and the flood, that's coming up this week. Looking outside of the weather forecast, okay. All right, you know, that's a tough word to use in the Wyoming Valley. I always get, when Bruce and I are walking over the bridge, we're always looking for that, I make sure that island, you know, there's an island under the Pier Street, the North Street Bridge. I always get relief when I see the island. Bruce always says to me, if the island is visible, the Susquehanna is about 4 feet tall, right? So we're good to go. Every week I look over there, I'm making, just checking out, making sure. Okay, so Noah, do you know that he spent, whatever it means, 120 years building that ark, that teva? 120 years. Do you know how many people, other than his immediate family and a friendly giant, do you know how many people he actually brought aboard that ark to save from the flood?
His wife?
Other than his wife and his immediate family, right. He brought Naamah, his wife, his three sons, and his three daughters-in-law. Eight people came aboard that ark. What about the rest of humanity, right? He was preaching 120 years. In fact, Bill Cosby, before I found out that he was something that I really didn't believe him to be. You may remember from your youth, you did a very funny shtick where God is speaking to Noah and he says, Noah, you know, build this, build that. And then people come by, he's not allowed to tell them. They say, hey, Noah, why are you doing that? He's like, I can't tell you. Can you give us a hint? And he says, how long can you guys tread water for? That was his line. Okay. So that's famous Noah. Okay. How many people did Noah affect with his 120-year commitment to building the ark? Do you know how many? Zero. You know why? Because it's told in the Torah, when Noah entered the ark was when the water, the rain came. He didn't go in before the rain came. You know why? Because he was miktanei emunah haya, Rashi, same Rashi. Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki tells us he was lacking in faith himself. He didn't really believe. In other words, it was theoretical. It was conceptual that there would be a flood. He didn't believe it. He only went in the ark to seek solace and protection when the rains came. So this is germane. Why? Because if we don't believe in this Rashi right now, that Israel is legitimate, that Israel is right, Israel is the or, is the light of our world, doesn't mean Israel's perfect. Never. Never. We're not saying that. Does Israel make mistakes? Of course. We're human. But I promise you, Israel's better than every other country on earth in that region. That's 100%. And I'll share with you a little anecdote in a second. So just to finish the thought then, this magnificent Rashi talking about that people will accuse you of having stolen the land, it's illegitimate, it's not really yours. It's speaking to everyone in the room now. You must believe. And like Noah, if you don't believe, you won't get anyone else to believe. And that's what that Rashi is saying. So let me share an anecdote. 1982, I'm dating myself now. I'm in yeshiva. And Rabbi Weinberg, my Rosh Yeshiva, was teaching us. He was the head of Ner Israel Yeshiva, very esteemed, famous scholar. His picture's in my office. You ever visit my office at the synagogue? And we were all hurt because you might remember this incident. It was a horrible incident. There were Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. One was called Shatila and one was called Sabra. Sabra and Shatila. Does anyone remember what happened?
Yeah.
So during that first Lebanon war in 1982, there were Christian Falange who have been massacred and raped and pillaged by the Muslims living in this Palestinian refugee camps. And when they had the opportunity, they wanted their revenge. And they came in, and for about a day and a half to 2 days, they killed hundreds of Palestinian refugees. It was a horrible thing. Israel was technically in charge of the camps. Their guards were on the perimeter. They didn't enter the camps, the Israelis, but they either winked or just looked the other way when these Christian Falange militia groups came in to commit these atrocities. Of course, who was held responsible for the deaths of these refugees?
Israel.
Jewish people. Israel. Ariel Sharon at that time was Israel's defense minister. His head rolled. They fired him over that. So I remember hearing these horrible, because I'm a young guy in Yeshiva. What do I know about the media says Israel's horrible? I have questions, right? I don't know. So I asked, or I vocalized in the class in front of Rabbi Weinberg about my misgivings about Shatil and Sabra. And he blasted me. I mean, in a beautiful way. He didn't like get angry, but he just looked at me and he got very upset. And he talked to everyone. He said, God forbid. He said, Chas v'shalom. He says that Israel is worse than any other country on earth. Because that's the narrative that we were being fed. He said, look, Israel is the light. Sometimes Israel is the same as every other nation on earth. Never worse. And I'll never forget what he said because it's so true. Right? If you look at the history of military conquests and what Israel has done in the past to preserve civilian life, I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I tell you in the past Gaza wars, they've been dropping leaflets. They have been using social media, cell phones to get civilians out of harm's way. And when those targets were not safe enough to make sure that Israel won't take civilian life, guess what Israel did? They called off the mission. So again, that doesn't mean that Israel won't be taking civilian life. You can't go into a place like Gaza City where you're facing an enmeshed bunch of rats who are hiding down below in these subway systems that they've built for millions of dollars in this intricate tunnels, where the hostages may be, by the way, many of them. You can't go in and clean out the rats without, unfortunately, civilians getting in the way when we want them not to be in the way. So inevitably, Israel is tragically going to have to take innocent life. It has to happen only because this is what Hamas wants. They're using them as human shields. So when that happens, and I say, God forbid it should happen, but it's probably going to happen, we have to remember what Rabbi Weinberg told me. We are never worse. We're sometimes the same, but never worse. And again, this is not something against the Allies. If you learn about the firebombing of Dresden during World War II, I'm not even going to go to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's a different argument, okay? Or the firebombing of Tokyo. War is hell. And sometimes you have to make really difficult choices. You're fighting the Nazis. You're fighting really bad people. And I, thank God, I don't have to make that choice, and you don't have to make that choice. But if you compare the history of Israel's civilian sensitivity and love for civilians and care for human life with anyone else, and I'm including all the allies that have fought the most noble, beautiful wars that had to be fought, it got dirty. It got really bad. So let's give Israel a little break and try to contextualize your people. Show them in the textbook. Say, before you criticize Israel and Gaza, go back to Dresden in Germany and learn what we did. Again, it was in defense of humanity. We couldn't lose that war, or we would all be lampshades and soap right now in this room, correct?
Correct.
We had to win that war, but it came at a tremendous cost to the morals of the British, the Allies, the Americans, the French, whoever was fighting. So I just want to share context with you, okay? I know I'm a little not as focused today, but my mind is, you have to forgive me. I'm very passionate, as you can hear, and I'm destroyed mentally. So if I get a little off topic, I didn't mean to be. I'm just throwing things out. Okay, let's continue on. You ready? We have about 12 minutes left or less. So I'm not going to ask you to look inside. And I'm just going to tell you something that is beautiful but is actually not here in your text. I'm going to skip this one for sake of brevity, okay? I want to share this with you. Something that outside of the context here. Okay. So on day number 3, God said, and I'm just going to paraphrase, you can read with me or not, that let the earth sprout vegetation, seeds yielding herbs, fruit trees producing fruit trees. All these things happened on day number 3 of the creation process. And then in source 4, It talks about when the generations of heavens and earth, when they were created, that when God made heaven and earth. And then it says regarding day six, now no tree of the field was yet on earth, neither did any herb of the field yet grow. So the question, the famous question, is this is a contradiction. On day three, you tell us that Yom Shlishi, on the third day of creation, God created herbs and plants and vegetation of every type. But then on day six, it says in source four, in direct contradiction to this statement from source three and day three, that there was an absence of vegetation and trees and things in the world. How do you reconcile it? It's beautiful. All the vegetation, all the magnificent world of the green and the colors, the magnificent colors that make our world so beautiful, it was all only potential. Day three is talking about potential. It grew, but it was layered under the topsoil, so it didn't come up and there were no fruits. There was no fruit, there was no herbs, trees, the magnificent world that we take for granted didn't exist yet. Do you know why it didn't exist? Because mankind didn't exist yet. But when mankind comes around, mankind looks at his world, and you know what he saw? A dark, desolate world. Sans magnificent vegetation that could be. And you know what mankind did? Adam, man, that's us. He realized something was lacking, and he needed to effect change. Guess what he did? He prayed. He prayed for rain. He said, please let there be rain. And when the rain fell, all the potential that was lingering below the surface, that topsoil of the earth, was nourished by the rain supplied by the blessing that God supplied in response to Adam's prayers. And then the magnificent world we know now came to be. So why is that germane right now? Because we in this room have incredible power, the power of prayer. So all the darkness that is in our world right now, we can affect change. It may seem hopeless, it may seem like a small thing, but I promise you it's not. If God has a blessing for you and me and for our world, you need to ask God for that blessing. It doesn't automatically come your way. It's ready for us. The potentiality of that blessing, of that bracha, is right around the corner. It's waiting for us right now. But we have to open our mouths in response to something lacking in our world. And we have to be sensitive to what is missing and open our mouths in prayer and beseech God to please give it to us, to give it to our world. And then the most magnificent blessing will be bestowed upon us. So what a powerful idea. I wanted to share that with you. The gate of Dima'os, of tears, is never closed to a penitent person. If a person thinks, God doesn't want to hear from me because I'm a bad guy. I'm a bad girl. No, God's not going to listen to me. Guess what? A person who cries, who sheds a tear of compassion, in other words, who feels the sense of loss in their heart and emotes that sense of desperation. I need God. Please help me. God will always listen to those prayers. And those tears will be measured and they will affect incalculable, untold change in our world. So right now, I really believe that if we as human beings, everyone in this room and everyone who cares, if we will continue to beseech God with our prayers, if we will open our hearts to the suffering and to the needs that our world has, this is not an exaggeration to say the world right now is at a precipice. I know we may not feel that way, but I'm not going to go there. It's too dark. Iran is a very dark form of Islam, and you can research this yourself after. They believe in something called the 12th Imam, and it's sort of like Gog and Magog, the apocalyptic version that they really kind of want to bring on our world. I don't want to frighten anyone, but this is just reality. It's a truth. Okay? And Iran is dancing around everything that's going around Israel. They have surrounded Israel with Hamas in the south, Hezbollah to the north. You have Syria also a little bit to the northeast of Israel. And then you have in Yemen, the Houthis and other little, they're all little proxies for Iran. And ultimately, I think Our administration knows this. There's a reason those two carrier groups are right off the coast of Israel, because they know that if they engage from the north and surround Israel with a two or three front war, we're all going to have to fight for humanity. And we don't know how it's going to end, but I do know how it's going to end. You know how it's going to end? We're going to end with victory. The forces of Choshech, of darkness, are not going to win the day. How do I know this? All right. First word of our Bible is what? In the beginning, Bereshit. So our rabbis, and I deliberately didn't put it in my sheet, source sheet for you. It says the world was created Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reshit, for the sake of something called Israel, who are called the first. There won't be a world, and there can't be a continued existence of a world, unless Israel exists in our world. And Israel doesn't just include necessarily the Jewish people, because it wasn't a fait accompli that it would always go to Jacob, it could have gone to others. But anyone who buys in to the light and who shares Israel's values is Israel. We're all Israel. And I believe that right now there's an existential fight going on in our world. And I believe sensitive people, we all kind of feel that. We don't know where it's going to end. But God says, open your mouths in prayer. Beseech me, because I got blessing for you. I'm going to support you. But you have to ask. So my prayer, my hope for all of us is that we will continue to be advocates, to open our hearts to need everywhere in our world, especially in Israel at this point. There's lots of wonderful charities to help out, lots of things we can do. And there's lots of prayers that we can gather and tears that we can shed. And God should answer every one of our prayers and every one of our tears. And that, or that light that we have lost in our world, the magnificence of those 1,400 souls that will never get to live out their magical journey in our world, we can't replace their light, but we can effect change to make up for the loss of light and bring our world back from the Choshech. So that's my prayer for everyone. We should continue to be Chazak ve'amatz, the words that Joshua was given. Be strong and courageous to hold down the fort, what we can do for Israel. Thank you, everyone.